Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex, I have spent the entire day scrubbing the internet of everything that I said on Friday evening's podcast after I declared this 90th Masters over, because Roy McIlroy was leading by a half dozen shots and there was no way that he was possibly going to come back to the field and make this an interesting tournament. Alas, that is exactly what has happened. Roy McIlroy shot 73 in the third round here at Augusta National, has dropped into a share of the 54-hole lead with Cameron Young. Sam Burns just a shot behind. Shane Lowry now sits two shots behind heading into Sunday. Jason Day, Justin Rose also in the mix. And Scottie Scheffler, yes, the world number one shot 65. More on that in a minute, and Hao Tong Li are just four shots behind. Not sure that this was the best Saturday in Masters history, but boy, was this an entertaining day of golf, Rex, at Augusta National.
I'm not quite sure why you're out of breath. Did you run here? Is that what
I was excited.
All right.
I'm excited. It's an exciting day.
Or maybe you just came here because you were too busy scrubbing the internet. But as our friend Jake just found out, and Jake, you can cue it up now. He did not completely scrub it from the internet.
So that was 14 holes that won him the 2025 Masters. In essence, this was a seven-hole stretch that, in my opinion, won him the 90th Masters. When you look at what...
Oh, I've never been so happy to have a producer.
Jake,
that was
my God.
Fantastic.
What have you done?
My man. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was great. Thankfully, they like to play 72 holes in this tournament, as you pointed out. And it was a really cool Saturday at the Masters. You and I both were kind of giddy. We were on the edge of our seat as we watched it, not just because of what was happening with Rory. And that's pretty shocking when you consider there was two over par rounds out of the top 20. And one of them was Rory McIlroy. The other one was Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, that's stunning considering how well, just not this week, but let's don't forget what Rory did here last week. I think the other part of it is sort of the ebb and flow. This happened quickly. Rory bogeys the first hole. Suddenly everything's going sideways. You have players who are making up ground, and all day long was a back and forth. I can only imagine what tomorrow's going to be like.
I mean, guys, I have so many notes because it was that eventful.
I don't.
Of a third round here at the Masters. You had balls carrying off trees and coming back into play. You had Hao Tong Li topping balls. You had Cameron Young, who was surging on the second nine, misjudging wedge shots. I mean, there was so much to get to. Let's first start with Roy McIlroy, of course. And there was a reason, Rex, for the confidence that I had in Roy McIlroy, because it was a history-making 36 holes that he had here, going 67-65, leading at 12 under par. No one in the history of the Masters, again, this is the 90th playing of the Masters, had ever led by six shots at halftime. Harry Cooper, back in 1936, was the only player to blow a five-shot lead. Everyone else in that position at the halfway point had gone on to win. Clearly, though, Rex, this was the worst round of the week. And you see this all the time in tournament competition, even on a stage like this, where you can't play flawlessly for 4 days. And I think this was pretty clearly his poor day. And it started, as you mentioned, right off the bat. On number one, he had just 98 yards to the pin, ends up hitting over the back, can't get up and down. Doesn't birdie number two. He had a sand save on number four. He had a poor gap wedge on number five. He had a filthy up and down on number six. He was scrambling on number seven. He made the big mistake on number 11, hooking his tee shot into the water, ended up making double. He had a pull on 12 with just a pitching wedge. Couldn't get up and down there. He had a thin wedge on 13, but was scrambling for par there. He was in the trees on 17 and couldn't convert an up and down there. It added up, Rex, to a day in which he hit just half of the greens, again, hitting just half of the fairways, just very, very scrappy stuff. The first couple of rounds, he got away with it. He could lean on his wedge play. He could lean on his short game. He could lean on his putter. The iron play in particular was incredibly poor, according to our friends at Data Golf. 6.5 shots worse from the second round to the third round. That's why this is now a ball game.
And it's a little shocking because we touched on this last night. The one thing that he wasn't doing particularly well, and that's relative to the rest of his game, was driving the ball. And it's kind of shocking. We talked a lot about this last night and today on Live From that. The one thing it seems like if he was doing well over the course of his career, yeah, he's going to have a chance to win. If he wasn't, you kind of wrote him off. But through two rounds, he wasn't. I will point out, he actually drove the ball better today. That's pretty much what he did well. He picked up a shot and a half on the field. That has a lot to do with a couple of different holes where he just hit some phenomenal shots. But you worked through the card. I'm not going to rehash all of that, but it's the double bogey on number 11. Jack Nicklaus was really clear when he talked to Rory about we're a family pod. We're a G-rated pod. We're not going to fill in the blank. But Rory knows that. He didn't need Jack to tell him. I mean, that was a very sloppy double bogey. It's one thing to make a bogey under these conditions. It's a tough golf course. You can end up with a bounce. Cameron Young was just talking about it in his press conference when I think he had three straight bogeys on Thursday. And he's like, I don't feel like I hit a bad shot. Like, I just kind of ended up in some weird situations and had eight footers for pars and just didn't convert them. It's really easy to do on this golf course. Making double bogeys isn't acceptable. Not when you're Rory McIlroy in that situation.
Yeah, it certainly seemed, Rex, like he was trying to save it at the bottom, getting a little flippy and just a very, very strange. I certainly do as well. If you're a Rory McIlroy fan, I think you still have to be heartened by some of the shots that he hit in this third round. I'm thinking about driving the green on number three. Yeah. That was a majestic tee shot, headed to about 20 feet there. Hit a great tee ball on number 9. Hit a great tee ball on number 10.
15.
Hit a great tee ball on number 15. Finally hit a fairway, 18. Folks, on a par 5. That was the first time in 12 tries that Rory McIlroy hit the fairway on 15.
Ended 18 up, was a bomb.
18 was a bomb as well. I go back to 15, Rex. That was almost a rehash. Not quite. Almost a rehash of what we saw in the final round. Slinging it slightly around the trees. Setting up an eagle.
13 is killing him. CBS did a great job with a great graphic showing where his three tee shots have ended up on 13 this week. And keep in mind that the chairman talked about this earlier in the week. When they moved the tee box back on 13, the idea there was, one, they wanted to make players be a little bit more aggressive off the tee. They wanted them to try to turn it off the tee because players were almost laying back because anything that didn't turn exactly ended up in the pine straw. And so what the chairman talked about is you had more players actually going for the green and trying to hit that heroic shot. It hasn't worked out for Rory this week. Every single shot has just been deeper and deeper into the pine straw. It's pretty shocking because it seems to me that's the one thing he loves the most. It's the go-to shot, and he's not executing it when he has to.
How rattled do you think that Rory McIlroy is by this round? Again, this came out of nowhere. He shot 67, 65 over the first couple rounds here. I tend to think that this was just sort of a one-off. It was an anomaly. This is something that can be figured out on the range, particularly when you look at his iron play. Again, I think he hit enough good drives over the course of this third round to believe that he can get that straightened out again. He's obviously going to have to capitalize on the par fives. That was the one thing he did not do particularly well on Saturday that he'd done the first two rounds. Iron play can be sorted out at the tournament practice area before his round on Sunday. Do you think he's rattled? Do you think he's encouraged that he's still in the lead? Actually, the way that we were breaking it down on the front side, he's actually pretty fortunate that he just escaped with a 73 here. It could have actually been much worse from some of the positions he was playing from.
I mean, I think the short answer is not very. I think in the heat of the moment when he's on the golf course, there was probably some moments when he felt like, I've been here before. I know this. I've seen this play before. Everything is unraveling. Please make this stop. But after he finishes up his press conference, which is going on right now, after he gets back to his house and he sits down and finishes watching Zootopia 2, which I tend to agree with my colleague, Todd Lewis, by the way. This was a huge debate here at the Masters for whatever reason. Brandon Chambly seems to think the original Zootopia was the best of the two. I like two.
Wow.
It's all about taste. I mean, it was a good debate, maybe one of the better debates we've had.
I mean, Zootopia is actually a top 5 rated kids movie of all time, according to Rotten Tomatoes. And I enjoyed Zootopia. I enjoyed Zootopia,
you
too.
You have kids. I don't even have kids, and I've watched it.
So did my 7-year-old.
I have kids, but they're not of that age. I don't think by the time he gets back to his house and has a chance to process this, but this goes back to what we've been talking about all week long. He's literally playing for house money. He walked from the media center when he's done here tonight, and you know where he's going? Back up to the Champions locker room and having a Coke Zero and putting his feet up and saying to himself, well, I've won this before. There's no reason I can't do it again.
I think he's still going to be encouraged by even what happened in that final round a year ago. And I've said numerous times in this podcast that that was the most consequential round of Rory McIlroy's career, one of the most consequential rounds in major championship history. The fact that he was 4 up with 6 to play, lost that lead, and then went out and won it. There is nothing that can unfold on Sunday with either Cameron Young or Justin Rose or Shane Lowry or Jason Day or Scottie Scheffler, anything that's going to happen over the course of the final round that's going to either surprise him or I think really shake him the way that last year did. If he could withstand that and endure that sort of stress, that sort of pressure, I don't think anything. You do look at history from Rory McIlroy. He's 5 of 7 with the 54-hole lead, at least a share of the lead in a major championship that will be on the line on Sunday. Let's get into Cameron Young, the Players Champion who shot 65, is actually in position now to become the 3rd consecutive Players Champion to win the Masters in the same year.
Cool,
look at Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy a year ago. Of course, also Cameron Young can make some history going out in 40, shooting 73 in that opening round. He was tied for 33rd with Cameron Young at that opening round. That would equal the worst starting position ever for a Masters champion, tying, yes, Tiger Woods back in 2005 when he opened with 74. What were your thoughts on Cameron Young's bogey-free 65?
I think you and I got into a fun debate this afternoon. We were listening to his press conference, and I made the comment that he's boring. And I don't find his personality to be very engaging. You pointed out very sharply to me that he's smart.
Yes.
Two things can be very true. I agree. He's very smart. When you listen,
incredibly intelligent golfer.
Coming off of what happened at the Players, where he seemed to just reach his stride. He seemed to reach that epiphany that all the top players do and just understand, I don't have to be perfect, that I'm plenty good enough to compete on the highest level. Coming off of that, I 100% agree with you. He can still be a little dry. Maybe boring was a bit of a strong word. He can definitely be a little dry.
He's monotone in his delivery.
I'm not even talking about his delivery. I'm just talking about the essence of what he's saying.
He's unemotional. He's even keeled. But he's also doing that by nature. He's sort of Xander Schauffele in that respect. He doesn't want to get too high.
Xander has that wonderful sense of humor. Xander might have the best sense of humor on the PGA Tour.
But he's dry and quick-witted.
He is. He's very dry and very quick-witted. I would point to a player like Henrik Stenson, who was also very monotone, very dry, but had a wonderful sense
of
humor.
God, I miss Henrik.
He might be the most tragic person at all that we lost to LIV Golf. But I love the one point that he made that I'll go back to, where when we talked to him on Sunday at the Players' Championship, the whole point of this season, everything he's done in 2026, wasn't aimed to win the Players. No disrespect to Brian Rolapp and what may or may not be the fifth major. I don't want to get into that debate. It was about this. Everything he's done since the start of 2026 was to get to Sunday afternoon with a chance to win the Masters. I think that's kind of cool when it's a player of this caliber. And when you look at it statistically, and I mean, look, I hadn't really spent a lot of time looking at his stats this week. Just for today, he was first in strokes gained around the green. Always important here. He was second in strokes gained off the tee. For the week, he's in first in strokes gained off the tee. We always look at a Rory McIlroy or a Scottie Scheffler when it comes to who's dominating the field off the tee. That's what top players do. That's what Cam Young is doing.
Yeah, that's a great point about the Masters prep, but I don't think there could have been any better preparation for Cam Young than what he's experienced over the last 6 or 7 months, getting in that Ryder Cup cauldron, performing as one of the best Americans at the Ryder Cup. You look at what happened at the Players' Championship, hanging tough on that back nine, hitting the shots that he did on 17, stuffing it close when he absolutely had to have a birdie on 17, and then hitting the best drive in the Shot Link era on 18 at TPC Sawgrass to win that golf tournament by a single shot. I love that, Rex, the fact that he's been battle-tested, best prep possible. I also can't help but think, and Cameron Young was quick to point out, he got a little bit fortunate with some of the breaks. And you're going to need that in major championship golf. I certainly think back over the past couple Masters, Tiger Woods in 2019, Rory McIlroy in 2025. Every time they seem to be offline, I remember thinking, boy, he always has a window. He's always able to escape. It was the bounces for Cameron Young in this third round that really stood out. I'm thinking about the shot on 9 that he airmailed the green. I'm not sure if it hit a post or a stick, hit a person's leg, hit a chair, whatever the case may be. He was going to be dead over the back of the green, ends up kicking back onto the green about 30 feet short, able to calmly two-putt for par there, making the turn. On 13, hit what it looked to be a pretty quick hook. Could have rattled in the trees, could have dropped into creek, could have been unplayable, whatever the case may be. Instead, that one caroms off the trees, goes into the fairway, safely gets aboard.
Yeah, two of those.
And two putts for birdie as well. On 17, looked like he was going to be missing into the right trees, caroms off the trees, goes back in the fairway, and is able to make a par there and escape onto 18. And so I'm not saying that this was fluky. He shot 65.
Everybody played
phenomenal golf. The driving that you mentioned, first in strokes gained off the tee, that's exactly what it did at Bay Hill. That's exactly what it did at TPC Sawgrass. The guy is in an absolute groove with the driver. He is going to put so much pressure on Rory in that final group just because he's constantly going to be in great position to attack.
And I will point this out. Cam Young was asked in his press conference tonight. He knows he's not going to be the fan favorite tomorrow in that last group. He knows it's going to be Rory McIlroy. That's just the nature of Rory in this place. I think Brandon Chamblee put it great. There are Masters masters. And in this particular case, he's referring to Tiger Woods. He's referring to Phil Mickelson. We're talking about all those players who have won multiple Masters who just seem to drive down Magnolia Lane and something clicks.
Scottie Scheffler.
Something just different. Scottie Scheffler. Thank you very much. But he is going to be the guy that everyone is not rooting for. They don't boo people here. This is not Beth Page. He's not going to feel at home on that front. But he knows he's not going to be the one. He didn't have that at TPC Sawgrass.
I think they were actually booing Matt Fitzpatrick.
Well, they were trying. Yeah. I thought Matt had fun with that, saying that that's not booing. What they did at Bethpage.
That was savage.
That was savage.
But
I do love the dynamic of putting himself in that cauldron. Not only are you playing to try to win your first major and your first Masters, but you're doing it against what is a fan favorite. And you're not going to have the ton of support of the gallery.
But you look at his major championship career and some of the close calls he's had. I don't think that's ever been the case for Cameron Young. And he should scare the bejesus out of Rory McIlroy on Sunday for one reason.
I mean, the way he's hitting the ball.
Yes. Maybe two reasons. But when you look at what he's done in his runner-up performances, Rex, he's never really backed down. He's never really faded. He's never really collapsed. You look at his scoring average and the runner-up finishes he's had in the PGA Tour and in major championships, 67.5 for Cameron Young. He has played well, and he's just gotten beat. Rory McIlroy is going to have to go out and get it. I think that'll actually help him as well, knowing that he can't be defensive, he can't be tentative, he can't be conservative. He's going to have to go shoot something in the mid to upper 60s in order to win this golf tournament. Let's move a little bit further down the leaderboard. Sam Burns, just a single shot back. This might be the quietest 68 that we've seen in a long, long time. Bogey free from Sam Burns, who was playing alongside Rory McIlroy in that final group. Shane Lowry, ace number six at Augusta National.
Come on.
The Mount Rushmore of this guy and his hole-in-ones, you talk about Shane Lowry here. He has made a hole-in-one 7 at Pebble, 16 at TPC Sawgrass, 16 at Augusta. I'm missing another one, aren't I?
Well, earlier this year.
Earlier this year at in Houston, yep. Number two at Memorial Park. That doesn't quite have the same sort of stature.
Still kind of cool.
As those as well. But unbelievable for Shane Lowry, the amount of aces he has. Now he just sits just two shots back, trying to make sure that one of his best friends, Rory McIlroy, slipped the green jacket onto him on Sunday. Justin Rose, we've spent a lot of time this week talking about him trying at age 45 to win a green jacket. Jason Day, who's been close at least about a decade and a half ago at this point to getting a Masters title as well, three shots behind. And there's Scottie Scheffler with the 65. Which of those names I just mentioned really stood out to you?
Two of them. I think you and I both were sort of watching Sam Burns finish up this afternoon. And you had this sort of shrug and like, man, he's played heck of a round of golf. Like, I know it's getting overshadowed by what's going on with Rory, what's going on with Cam Young, but he just went out and did kind of the Autobot kind of thing where he wasn't rattled. He didn't look like any shots were coming off the club face incorrectly. So I'm looking forward to see how he performs. He's never really been in that situation in a major where he has a legitimate chance.
Well, last year, well, U.S. Open, 54-hole leader at the U.S. Open. But that was sort of a weird one, Rex. That was the first time that he'd even come close to that position. If you remember that day, it was really messy, really soggy.
Gross, yeah.
He had a bad ruling. He got in a divot on 11, ended up shooting 78. Yeah. I am curious to find out exactly what he learned from that situation. This is a guy who has, you know, he was an incredible player. He's a junior, incredible college player. He clearly has great pedigree. He does the things you'd think at Augusta National that should really benefit him. A great driver of the golf ball, hits it sky high.
Unbelievable putter.
And you look at what he's done with his approach play in particular, 14 or more greens every single day. He and Shane Lowry pacing the field in terms of greens and regulation. That's always a key stat here at the Masters.
And I think Rosie is one to keep an eye on just because you have three runner-up finishes at this place. Of course, he lost to Rory last year in the playoff. There is something special about this place when it comes to Rosie. I'm not quite sure he has the firepower because you watched the way everyone sort of stepped away today. I think you and I both sort of predicted today was going to be the difficult day, and that didn't turn out to be the case at all. Every player that came off the golf course was like, no, it was fair. You could be aggressive if you had a good number, if you were from the fairway.
Quote, very receptive.
The person you have to watch is Scottie Scheffler in this situation. I went down and talked to him after his round. The idea that his ball striking came around, this is one of his best iron play, one of his best approach performances we've seen in a long, long time. I think that should be the thing that has him excited about tomorrow. He's going to have to make a move on the front to close the gap a little bit, but we all know it's the cliche. Once you get to within two or three strokes going to the second nine, that's fun.
Yeah, so I really usually dislike when players come off the golf course and like, you know, that's the highest I could have shot. For Scottie Scheffler in 65, that actually is legitimate. I went back and tracked all of his approach shots. He missed.
But that's not what he said. Wait a minute.
I know. He had 7 misses inside 15 feet. And again, this is a player who shot a bogey-free 65, his best career round at the Masters tournament. He mentioned, Rex, in that press conference afterward, the ability to rise to the occasion and the best players wanting to meet the moment. That's what Scottie Scheffler did beginning this third round. What was he, 11, 12 shots back? At this point, ends up jumping up the leaderboard with a 65. He knows what it takes to get it done at the Masters. All of these players, I think even Rory McIlroy is going to be nervous knowing that he had a six-shot lead at the halfway point to get across the line. Cameron Young's going to be nervous trying to win his first major championship. Jason Day is going to be nervous trying to win a major championship for the first time in 11 years. Justin Rose has it 1-1 in 13 years at this point. All of these players are going to be dealing with feelings. I think that's going to be a very advantageous position for Scottie Scheffler, knowing he already has two of these, knowing he needs to be in chase mode, knowing he's going to need to make birdies and try to cut into that deficit.
And you look at the traffic on Saturday. It was a lot of two-way traffic. That's the best. When the Masters has that two-way traffic, you have players going in both directions. That's when it's at its best. And it happened quickly today with Rory right out of the gates, and I can imagine it's going to be the same tomorrow.
All right. Who is the winner and at what score?
I think Rory gets it done. I think you're right. I think today was the bad round. I think you can look at every major championship and whoever ends up winning will tell you one of those days didn't go according to plan. Clearly, that was going to be today for Rory. He's been there, man. Like, there is no debating this. He knows what he's doing now. He has the green jacket and he's just, I think the line that he used was free-flowing.
Freewheeling. Free-flowing.
No, I think the line he used was free-flowing. Maybe he mixed his metaphor, but that's what he used.
Free-flowing is me after drinking my creatine shake in the morning. I will say, Rex, that my winner is going to be Rory McIlroy as well. I think it's going to be in a playoff. I think we're going to have
a special treat. You already said Rory won this. Yes. You weren't even getting a chance to do that.
I think we're going to have a treat in this final round. I think it's going to be a playoff. I think both players are going to shoot 67, and Rory McIlroy is going to prevail in a playoff. If it just so happens to extend a couple extra holes, maybe it even dives into Monday, Rex. Our colleague Brentley Romine, who is one of the 20 lucky few who is going to be a part of the Masters Media Lottery. Yes, if this tournament gets pushed to Monday because of an overextended playoff, you wouldn't be able to tee up.
And maybe, I can see it.
Maybe, just maybe, your chance will come next year in 2027. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We hope you guys have been enjoying the Live From with Rex and Lav newsletter. Another one will be dropping on Monday morning. Make sure you subscribe wherever it is you get your newsletters. That information can be found at golfchannel.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.